Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
Nothing much. No Christmas hangover for me. Enjoyed the holidays with my friends and my family. How about you, Nick?
Great, great holiday. As always, I'm very blessed. A lot of great family, a lot of great gifts. Really appreciate everything I got, including my Caris LeVert jersey. But as always, you can check out OTG at OTG Basketball. You can check out all the pods there as well. You can check out the outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But let's get right into it with the Warriors. You know, a big loss to the Lakers yesterday. There's been a lot of talk about the state of the Warriors right now. Now, this is the first time in five seasons that they've had their 12th loss in December. You know, the first season of the Warriors dynasty, March 2nd, they had their 12th loss. The second season, never lost 12 games. Third season, March 8th. Fourth season, February 3rd. Is this concerning they already have their 12th loss at this point in the season, or it doesn't really matter just because they're not that motivated at this point?
No, it's concerning. You know, I think even to cut into those numbers a little bit deeper, they're 8-8 on the road, and they're 15-4 at home. And you see that 15-4, and you think, all right, four losses. All four of those losses, Nick, have been by 20 or more points. So when they lose at home, they're losing big. And obviously on the road, they're not as effective on winning on the road. It's definitely time to be a little bit worried. This was a fully healthy team last night against the Lakers, who, you know, lost LeBron James with 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. And they got housed by Rajon Rondo, Zubac. Josh Hart played pretty well down the stretch. Yeah, it's time to be worried if you're the Warriors, not because of the fact that they have 12 losses at this point, just because they're healthy and they just look a mess.
Yeah, I think the one concern is you saw in that third quarter, there was a point where they flipped the switch and it looked like, all right, the Warriors about to go on their run. LeBron's out of the game. But instead, the Lakers were able to bounce back, get that win. You know, I think it is concerning when you look at certain guys not performing as well. You know, Curry's missed time. There's all that question of chemistry with Kevin Durant and Draymond Green. If you had to say, what do you think is the biggest concern? Is it a player? Is it the mindset on the floor? What is it?
I mean, there's a couple of things come to mind. I think first off, it's if you're looking at a player, it's Draymond Green. He called the Lakers defense at following last night's game gimmicky. Not gimmicky. Everyone knows you can't shoot now, bro. You can't shoot. You're scared to shoot. You know, when you take away the threat of Draymond Green offensively, it really limits the Warriors' offense. You know, when a couple of years ago when he was hitting threes and he was playing point forward for them, it made their offense really diverse to have another guy you were scared of. No one's scared of Draymond Green anymore, and it does hurt their offense. Obviously, they should be able to bounce back because they still got Curry, Durant, and Thompson. But again, last night, you look at the stats, Klay Thompson only took 7 shots. He wasn't in foul trouble. There wasn't any issues like that. The ball wasn't finding his hands, and they weren't trying to get him going and through any sets. So I think it's between the offensive scheme, Draymond not playing well, and then simply, as you alluded to, this team just doesn't have the same juice right now. And we mentioned on the last pod, I think Cousins will help that, but they desperately need some energy.
Yeah, you mentioned Draymond, three-point shooting, 22% from three this year. So this is the worst he's shot from three since his rookie season. You know, he's averaging a career high in turnovers. And like you mentioned, he's not an offensive threat. There was a play I want to say was in the second half. I'm not sure if it was a third or fourth quarter. He had the ball at the top of the key, wide open for a three. He hesitated, ended up pulling up for like a teardrop that barely hit the front of the rim. So the confidence, yeah, it was ugly. And then a lot of people tweeted out he's washed after that. You know, I think Draymond still has game and he just needs to kind of find his rhythm. But something isn't right and they need to get him going because, like you mentioned, he's been a crucial piece of that team because of the versatility he provides offensively and defensively. Now, alluding to Klay, you mentioned that he wasn't getting enough shots last night. Do you think that's on Klay? Do you think it's on the Warriors or a combination of both?
I think it's a combination on both. I think Klay should be more demanding in that kind of situation for having more touches because McKinney, who we've talked about briefly on this on the outlet, you know, he had 10 shots. And I know three of them were he got an offensive rebound. He missed 2 shots, got the offensive rebound both times, and then finally made the third. So I know that kind of like skews his shooting numbers. But still, you know, no one besides Durant and Curry should ever outshoot Klay Thompson unless he's in foul trouble. It's just he's got to be the third guy getting at least 15 shots. So I think it's a both Thompson not being demanding, and then the Warriors, and you know specifically you know Curry and Durant not getting their third guy involved.
Are you concerned at all with Klay's shooting numbers? This is the first year he's shooting under 40% from three, only 33% from three. You know, field goal percentage isn't terrible at 44%, but the last few years he's been way higher.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really that concerned. I got to be honest that to start off the year, he was just dreadful. Then he obviously he had that huge outburst against the Bulls, and he's shown glimpses of it. I think for him, it's just all about rhythm. And obviously those early games, they were missing Curry. I think he's just getting into a rhythm. He's got to get into a rhythm. But you're not going to get into a rhythm only taking seven shots a game.
Yeah, very true. Do you think the rhythm is going to come from the you know his teammates getting involved? Or do you think it's kind of him just like, all right, guys, like you need to get me more involved to the offense. He needs to be a little bit more vocal because he's known as being a quiet guy. Or do you think it's something where his team needs to kind of react and be like, all right, we need to get him involved? It kind of is similar to the question I just asked, but it's more so, you know, forecasting what's going to happen.
I mean, I think this points to Steve Kerr. This is the situation where the guy manning the ship has to grab on to the reins and steer this stuff back on track. And it's got to be running sets to get Klay open, maybe some more screens, just keep the offense flowing. But I think it's on Kerr to try and figure out how to get Klay Thompson more involved and to get him more touches.
Gotcha. I think that's very fair, too. I think it's a combination of the coach vocalizing that to the players. You know, we need to get Klay involved, get him some easy baskets. I think it also comes with the whole team because you mentioned the word rhythm, and it doesn't seem like the Warriors are fully in rhythm. And when they're in rhythm, they're unstoppable, and right now you just don't see that. Some of it is probably just being out of sync, but some of that is just they're not bringing the same energy every night. Now, we talked about Cousins bringing that back and kind of infusing this team with energy. Do you think there's a possibility where he doesn't bring energy to the team and they continue to kind of I don't even want to say they're struggling because, what, they're still second in the West, but they're not the same Warriors that we've seen the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, The Ringer put out a really funny video last night, and it was from Home Alone. It was Kevin McAllister going outside and yelling, "I'm not afraid anymore," and it was following the Warriors' loss. I mean, so far to start this year, they're not scary, and that's probably been the one thing that's – shocking to me is the fact that a team with all these stars just isn't that scary. And yeah, I do think Cousins does bring energy. And as you mentioned, if he doesn't bring energy, I mean, I think this team still cakewalks into the Western Conference Finals because I still think in a 7-game series, they have enough to get at least as far as the Western Conference Finals. But if Cousins doesn't bring that juice and that doesn't bring these guys alive, I don't know if they're really a lock to make it out of the West. I mean, they're definitely still the favorite, but no question. But I would start to really question them in a 7-game series.
So let's say I gave you $100 to go bet on who's going to be NBA champion in the playoffs or to start tomorrow. Who would be the team that's your favorite to win it all right now?
I mean, it's still the Warriors. it's still the Warriors. I can't bail on a team that's got a – you know, they're on course to be, you know, history, possibly win.
Who are the top five players in the league, too? Like,
right. So, that $100 bet's still going on the Warriors.
Now, if you had to pick a second team that you think has a real shot at beating them this year, like a legitimate shot, in comparison to what we've seen the last few years, you can compare them to what we saw in the Rockets last year. We can compare them to the Cavs we saw the year before, you know, where they got lost in 5 games, or the Cavs from the previous season where they made the comeback. Does any team have a chance to be better than those teams in a playoff series, or are they going to be as bad as the Cavs that got swept in? Oh, not swept, but beaten 5.
Am I looking at the East or the West?
Either or.
I mean, I think the Denver Nuggets on paper have a really good shot. And, you know, they're number one still in the conference. We've mentioned the boatload of injuries they have. I think when that team gets healthy, the depth on that team – kind of like how they match up with the Warriors, I think they'd be a really tough out for a Warriors team that doesn't necessarily, have it all together.
I like Toronto. I'm really like buying in Toronto. Obviously, we haven't seen them almost. They've been, you know, resting guys and kind of putting themselves out of sync a little bit over the last 10 games. But I think the way they can match up with Golden State and really frustrate them and take them out of the rhythm with all the pieces they have. Nick Nurse has so many tools on that bench where they can kind of come in, and we know Kawhi has caused them problems in the past and probably one of the only guys in the league that can actually make Kevin Durant's life difficult. So I'm really intrigued to see what will happen. Obviously, we still have plenty of season left in the Warriors. And like you mentioned, Cousins coming back could change everything. And this conversation could seem stupid in a couple months. But any other thoughts on the Warriors before we move on, Corey?
No, I want to say that out of the teams in the East, I'm right there with you on the Raptors. I think between what we've seen for Kawhi at this point, the leader that Kyle Lowry has become, the resurgence of Serge Ibaka, the role players on this team, Danny Green's been a fantastic addition. I definitely think in the East, the Raptors are probably the biggest threats.
I like Siakam, too. I like the versatility.
Oh, I can't believe I forgot Siakam. Yeah,
yeah, the way he can match up with so many guys on Golden State, too, when he just has, like, an instant fast break, he's really been excellent. But we'll talk about Toronto on another show. Now, trade season is approaching. You know, December 15th, I think it was, where you can start trading guys who signed deals in the offseason and whatnot or were traded. And obviously, the deadline is going to be early February. What are five teams that need to make a trade? We can go one for one. You give me one, I'll give you one for me.
Okay. The first team I have is the Utah Jazz.
Got them too.
Yeah, watching them last night, they did defeat the Portland Trail Blazers, who, as we mentioned, they had a prime case of Lillard showed up and nobody else. So they kind of fell apart. But I think the Jazz still, you know, last night they got a good effort from Gobert and Inglis, and Donovan Mitchell was okay, but they really, as we've mentioned on previous shows, they just need another scorer. They need somebody who can take the pressure off Mitchell. Because if this team wants to be back in the playoffs, what they have offensively, I just don't think is enough.
Exactly. I'm 100% in agreement with you. I have Utah on my list as well, and they just need to add that offensive pop. You know, either it's that scoring, that's playmaking, that's something to kind of relieve Donovan Mitchell and the rest of that team, get some more energy in there and help them take another level. Because even looking forward, I don't think they're going to be a hot spot for free agents, so they need to kind of do something on the trade market and take advantage of some of the stuff they have. I also have Charlotte Hornets. You know, I think they have to
me
make
too.
A decision.
That's why I say me too as well.
Yeah, I had a feeling we were both going to be on this. I wouldn't be surprised if almost all of our teams are the same. Charlotte, though, I think they need to get better or they need to trade Kemba. You need to make a decision. Are you going to make this team better and, you know, push for the playoffs and really have a competitive series this year? Or are you going to not really add pieces and just be the same team that's probably going to get swept in the first round? If that's the case, you trade Kemba, but you have to make a decision and you have to do something. You can't just sit on the team that you have.
Pretty much you can copy and paste everything you just said for me as well. I'm right there with you. It's a team that's been stagnant for too long. You have a star in Kemba Walker who has the opportunity to possibly leave Charlotte at the end of next year. You either have to go all in to try and re-sign him and prove to him that Charlotte's where he wants to be, or move on and start bringing in some new assets to look towards the future. It's really that simple at this point in time.
It really is. I don't think there's a team that needs to make a trade probably more than the Hornets because of where they're at. You know, you don't want to be in this mediocre category for 5 years, which they pretty much have been. But who else you got, Corey?
The next team I have on my list is another team in the East, the Detroit Pistons. You know, they've been really struggling their last 10 games. They're just two for their last 10. Blake Griffin has been fantastic this year, but it feels like it's just Blake Griffin. there's just not a lot going on there. I think Dwayne Casey just misses the kind of depth he had in Toronto because there's just not a lot of depth here. Reggie Bullock, when he's on the floor, has been pretty good this year. Reggie Jackson, just a major disappointment for the amount of money he's making. Andre Drummond, I think, is a nice complimentary piece, but this team desperately needs to kind of retool the entire roster. And I think you can do that and keep, like, I think the team can be built around Griffin and Drummond, but I think there's a desperate need to shake up this entire roster. Because even bringing in guys like Glenn Robinson III hasn't really panned out, unfortunately, even though I know I was really high on him heading into the year. It just really hasn't worked out. He's shooting 38% and 29% splits. No longer can hit the corner three, which is what they were hoping he could probably bring to them. So for me, it's everybody on this roster alongside Griffin and Drummond, I would be open to pretty much fire selling.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. And the only reason I didn't have them on my list is just because I don't know if they have necessarily a ton of assets to make the trades they need to have. They'd have to probably move some first-round picks or something because there isn't a ton of young guys that are going to bring in a lot of things, and they're so cap-strapped with Blake and Reggie Jackson. I think, you know, this has been a trade that we've mentioned on here, it's been mentioned on Twitter a lot, is bringing in John Wall. If Washington does blow it up, you know, you look at the possibility of bringing in John Wall. You know, you're stuck with the big money for Blake. You'll be stuck with the big money for John Wall. If that doesn't work out, you know, you move on when their contracts run out. But I also have New Orleans Pelicans on my list. I think they need to boost themselves up. Similar to the Kemba Walker situation in Charlotte, they need to make their team better for Anthony Davis. So he's interested in staying, and they're, you know, telling him, you know, look at you, look at us. We're trying to build a team so we can actually compete. Right now, they're out of the playoffs. They might not even make the playoffs. So they need to add some type of boost. And it's mostly in the depth category because their starting five isn't bad. It's more so when somebody gets hurt, they have no one to back them up.
Yeah. I did have the Pelicans on my list, but I did give them a look. I mean, this is a team that is in a similar predicament as the Hornets, in which, you know, there's a lot of rumors around Anthony Davis. He's in a small market. They had a decent run last year in the playoffs. And I think to at least try and keep a star like Davis, or at least to keep him as happy as he's reportedly happy in New Orleans, you got to win in advance in the playoffs and get farther and farther. And for them, depth has been an issue. You know, Elfrid Payton missing some time. You know, Davis has missed some time too this year. It's, you know, aside from Jrue Holiday and Mirotić and Julius Randle and Davis, this team is really, really thin.
Yeah, it's definitely a concern, and they need to try to add something. I think the last two seasons they've traded their first-round pick, so you expect them to be kind of busy. And you mentioned all the rumors with Anthony Davis. Our Cam T just wrote a great article at Dark Horse Candidates, because there's a chance New Orleans doesn't want to kind of mess with L.A. or Boston. They want to look to one of the other, you know, lesser-known teams maybe, so something to keep an eye on. I also have the Houston Rockets on my list. I think, you know, they're at a point where they have Chris Paul, they have all this money to him, James Harden being the player he is. There's no point in just going to the playoffs and not being able to compete at the same level that you did last year. So there's no reason not to add more talent and try to compete again this year, especially with the Warriors, like we talked about, not looking amazing.
I mean, when the Rockets signed Chris Paul this offseason, they pretty much also made a statement that they are trying to win a title now.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're going to try and win a title now, as you just mentioned, you got to get this roster better. You got to continue to improve. Yesterday's win over the Thunder, it just goes to show you what you can do when you have James Harden on the floor. But the fact of the matter is, as you mentioned, if you want to get back into the Western Conference Finals, if you want to challenge this Warriors team, which may be slipping, you just got to add more complementary pieces around James Harden. I think the Rockets will do that, whether it's through the buyout market. Obviously, we know they've been rumored to be interested in some wings, and, you know, KCP, Kent Bazemore. I would be shocked if Houston did not make a move.
And I think the thing with Houston, you kind of referencing, Corey, is they don't necessarily need to add all-stars. They just need to add really good complementary players that can, you know, benefit from playing with James Harden and Chris Paul when Paul's healthy.
Precisely.
Now, who else you got, Corey?
All right, so I got two teams left. The next team is completely based off last night's win I even tweeted about, and that's the Los Angeles Lakers. And I say that, and now let me, before I sound crazy, LeBron James has this four-year deal, and we're in year one. Yes, he just got hurt. And him getting hurt to me is also kind of like a warning sign, because even though he's probably going to miss a handful of games, maybe even less knowing LeBron, there is still a very small window in which LeBron can possibly still be this great. I know we were enjoying it. He's in the middle of still being great, but eventually he's got to regress. He's got to come back to earth. That's just what history has shown us. And I think if you're the Lakers, especially after a win like last night, you got to think that maybe this team isn't as far away as you thought they were. So, and I'm not saying go out and trade for anybody. You still got to make the right moves that correspond with your timeline and fit around LeBron James. But for example, a guy like Bradley Beal, another wizard that we've mentioned before on this podcast, if he was to become available, I'd go more in, pushing more chips in on making that kind of move. Because I think this Lakers team proved last night that they can compete with the Warriors. I mean, obviously Cousins isn't there, but I think the Lakers have, as long as they have LeBron, they have a real chance of winning. It's whether or not they get the right pieces around them.
Yeah, it's definitely something to consider. I think the Lakers are in an interesting scenario, like you kind of talked about, being LeBron is the main concern. Obviously, his injury revealed today that it wasn't anything too serious and he should be back hopefully in a couple games. But it's like, do you kind of wait and see what you have with this young talent, or do you just go all in and get a guy? I think if I'm the Lakers, I'd probably look at moving Brandon Ingram, because it just doesn't seem to be working out with LeBron. He's probably not playing his best basketball, and he'd be better off elsewhere, and they'd be better off with someone who's more of a complimentary piece. But I think the other guys you could keep around. So in the right move, in the right scenario, I think they do make a trade to boost it. But I wouldn't be completely mad at them if they sat on it for a year and were more active in the offseason, because there's so many pieces that come by, including an Anthony Davis, who could possibly kind of extend LeBron's greatness.
I agree. I mean, I think realistically, you're right. The best course of action would be to let the season play out, find out who you can really keep, depend on, you want to go forward with, who really isn't a part of the plans in attack free agency. But like, again, as I just mentioned, I think if you can make the right move and you're not giving up a ton, you can bring in a guy who can help you win now. So I think the West is more wide open than any of us expected to be at this point in the season.
Yeah, I mean, going to the year, I know a lot of people, us included, had, you know, Houston and Utah in the top. And right now, Utah doesn't look like they can get to the top. Houston's finally starting to play well. You know, OKC has been more impressive probably than we thought, especially with the Roberson injury. But the West is definitely open for LA to really make a big splash. Also, I have on my list, this is the complete opposite, a team that's not interested in the playoffs, but I think it's important for them to make trades is to kind of gather assets, and that's the Cleveland Cavaliers, LeBron's old team. You know, I think it would just make a ton of sense for them to make sure they trade off those veterans, even if it's getting a ton of second-round picks. They don't have necessarily a ton of young talent on that team, so you just want to bring young guys in and see what's going on.
Yeah, be active. You know, another team that I think, like Larry Nance Jr., that's a guy you can probably keep long-term, and they've got him signed up long-term. But I agree, you don't have to get crazy returns back for guys you're getting rid of. Like a J.R. Smith, they're not going to be a ton of return on him probably.
Second-round pick should do enough for you, even if it's just for a team that's looking for cap relief. And I think that's what they need to do is take on some bad contracts, and maybe if they can get in some first-round picks, similar to what, you know, the Nets have done in the past.
Exactly. I wouldn't even be shocked if they look to move a guy like Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah,
who's been, obviously he struggled the second half of last year with the Cavs, and his shooting splits aren't crazy good this year, but he's definitely upped his value. So who knows what you can get for him? Because I know, like, for example, a team like the Suns or a team like the Magic, maybe they're willing to dish off some kind of asset, a small young guy or a draft pick, because they want to take a chance on a point guard.
Yeah, it's definitely something to consider. I wouldn't hesitate if I'm them to bring in second round picks. And you know, I don't think Clarkson really has much value to them long-term anyways, and maybe someone will take a flyer on him. What was your last team, Corey?
My last team is the team near and dear to my heart, and that's the Indiana Pacers.
I was going to put them on my list, but I was like, you know, I'll let Corey handle this.
Yeah, you know, third in the East right now, 22-12, 8 of their last 10 they've won. They really seem to be putting it all together. For them to be a real contender in the East, I just think they need to add another piece. You know, and I think it comes down to them probably having to trade either Darren Collison or Corey Joseph, and maybe even Tyreek Evans, depending on how they view him at this point in time. Because I know Pacer fans are souring on him. It feels like by the quarter at this point. it just hasn't really been working out. We were better off keeping Lance Stephenson, because at least Lance Stephenson's really entertaining to watch. This is the Tyreek Evans that I always thought he was, and last season he fooled me. But I think the Pacers could really, just a small move, maybe even a more competent point guard, could really push this team over the edge.
Yeah, I think I was looking at it and I was like, you know, the Pacers could possibly sit and just keep the team they have and let it develop a little bit more, but they also could make a move, because it's not like they're a hot commodity come free agency wise, being in Indiana, not a huge market. So I think bringing a piece would be easier to re-sign. We've kind of mentioned on my previous shows, but I think it would make sense if they really want to compete this year, because I don't think they're far off. One all-star and they're really contending in the East to possibly even beat everyone, depending on who it is.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the biggest part of that too, which might push the Pacers into that, bringing more talent, is the fact that for the first time in their time together, Miles Turner and Victor Oladipo look like a number one and a number two option on a team. And the Pacers haven't had that. This is what we were hoping for going into the year. We didn't see it in the first half of the year. Victor Oladipo getting hurt, as I mentioned before, actually became the best thing to happen to the Pacers, because Miles Turner has never been more confident in himself. And I think seeing that, Kevin Pritchard knows that he can possibly just bring in a little bit more talent, and those two guys maybe even to pop off further.
Yeah, and I think defensively, Miles Turner's been extremely impressive in the Pacers as a unit, and I think a lot of that goes to him with his mobility and pick and roll and being able to defend and being so active. But moving on from there, talking about some bad teams, we're going to talk about the best of the worst, and that's the bottom four teams in the East. So that would be the Bulls, the Knicks, the Hawks, and the Cavs. So I'm going to give you a couple questions in reference to these teams, and you're going to tell me, you know, who's the best of the worst, okay?
Okay.
So best young core of these four. So the Bulls, the Knicks, the Cavs, and the Hawks.
Oh, wow. I'm going to say the best young core is Porzingis considered a young piece still?
We will, if we're including Porzingis, we'll include Porzingis for the young core because he will be back next year. So it's not like he's dead or anything. Right. So
I'm going to say the Knicks then, based off Porzingis and even just, you know, Kevin Knox, Alonzo Trier. I think the Knicks by far have the best core.
Yeah, and Damian Dotson's been pretty good too. They have a couple guys, and you know, Frank hasn't really been playing, but he should be able to, you know, gather them a nice asset, and they're probably going to get another high pick.
And even Moutier is still pretty young.
He's which is well. Extremely impressive because I definitely didn't think he would pop off in New York the way he has. Obviously, not winning comes in. I think the Knicks probably have the best young core, especially when you're including Porzingis, because out of those four teams, Porzingis has clearly the highest ceiling. I think if we're not including Porzingis, I'd probably go with the Bulls. What about you?
I don't know, because when I think of the next core, I kind of want to lean towards the Hawks, and that's crazy because I don't even like Trae Young, but I think John Collins is solid, and I really like Kevin Huerter. He was a steal for them. I think Bulls have maybe the more flat. You're right. No, it's got the Bulls are probably second between Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., and Chris Dunn. They can probably still screech out as the second best young core, but I don't even think I would be able to physically put LaVine in that category because I don't know. I don't like him. I don't think I'm a big fan.
Yeah, and I mean, you could question if he's part of the young core because he's still like getting to that middle 20s. But I think with just Lauri and Wendell and then Chris Dunn, I think that gives you enough to possibly, you know, boost him up. Best player so far this season out of all four teams?
Nick, what was the question?
Best player so far this season. So out of these four teams, which team has the best player just based off of this year? So like excluding Porzingis.
Best player this year on these four teams. I mean, Zach LaVine was really good to start off the year. And then Larry Nance had a stretch, and Kevin Knox was good the last month. I'm going to – oh, you're a bastard. That's a tough question. That's my job. Yeah. I'm going to say Kevin Knox, I guess. But I really want to say Lauri Markkanen.
I would say so far this season, if we're not including defense, you go with Zach LaVine. But actually, I think a guy that you mentioned that doesn't catch enough love and is putting up some extremely, you know, good numbers is John Collins. And, like, he's such a good fit for the current NBA. I think Zach LaVine's probably been the best just because he's been putting up great numbers. You know, the defense has sucked, but John Collins is a guy I would consider, too. Anybody on Cleveland catching attention from you? Colin Sexton's been pretty good.
Colin
Sexton. Especially after they said that he couldn't play.
Yeah, Colin Sexton has impressed the second half of this first quarter of the season. Pretty much right after the comments came out where a vet said he couldn't play basketball. He's pretty much been really impressive since those comments came out. I mean, you're right, though, on the fact that John Collins deserves more credit because he missed the first 2 weeks of the season, I want to say.
Yeah, and then everybody kind of forgot about him. And then he came back just like a supercharged. He's only played 16 games this year. So,
right.
And like, obviously, some of that comes into it, but I like the way he fits for the new NBA and the energy he brings to the game. He's super springy.
A good guy for Trae Young, especially around the rim.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think every point guard would like playing with a player like him. Yeah. Who's been the best rookie out of these four teams?
Kevin Knox. I think Kevin Knox with probably Colin Sexton second, surprisingly. And then Wendell Carter Jr. third, I would say. But Wendell Carter Jr. could possibly be second. It's kind of tough to gauge that Bulls team because they've been so
– all over the place.
Yeah, they've been on the end of a lot of bad scores.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, this is tough. I think Kevin Knox is coming with, like, recent play. He's been really good, but he's had stretches where he was benched and he wasn't playing, also dealt with the injury. I think I'm going to go with Colin Sexton because of just, like, the way he bounced back. And his team is not very good. You know, he doesn't necessarily have a ton of great players because he hasn't played much with Kevin Love. I think Colin Sexton's probably been the best rookie out of these guys. But if you finish the rest of the year, I could easily see it being Kevin Knox. I saw Kevin Knox live, and I can tell you he is silky smooth. Like his game, you can already tell he's going to be a very good player in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, watching the game yesterday, that was the one Nick who I just couldn't take my eyes off. He's just got the body, the build, and it looks like he's already gotten way more smarter. Just like the IQ of his game seems to have already doubled since he got into the league. But you make a good point about Sexton, because his shooting numbers, I didn't realize he was shooting 38% from three, and that was a real issue for him early.
And if you look at his numbers, you know, post comments, I think they're even better. Obviously, that's still, you know, taking out some of the season. Obviously, you didn't mention your guy, Trae Young, but have you been impressed with him at all?
I mean, I think he's a very good ball handler. And I think he's phenomenal at hitting the 35-footers. But I haven't been – I definitely haven't been blown away. I think he's just been solid from the fact that he can definitely be the guy to run your offense. I just don't know how efficient that's going to be.
Yeah, I think the jump shot is the, you know, when that comes, we'll have a better idea where he's at. I think the passing has been impressive. I think the biggest scare of on the Hawks is just the defense, because obviously he's going to add some size, but I don't know. I'm just not 100% sold on him in that aspect. Out of the four teams, though, which of them is the closest to contending? You know, not for the championship, but maybe for a playoff spot.
I'm going to say the Knicks. I feel like I had to give a lot of Nick answers for this. I'm going to say the Knicks, because if you add Porzingis back, I think that gives them you can make the case for Kevin Love too, I suppose. But I think the Knicks are closer.
I'm taking Porzingis over Love if KP is healthy.
Yeah, so I'm going with the Knicks.
Yeah, I agree. I think, none of them are going to get a player at Porzingis' level if he's 100% back. And then obviously they have, you know, the energy of MSG and kind of bring it in. They have a whole bunch of pretty good role players in that team. I think if maybe the Knicks strike out or KP isn't amazing, you look at a team like the Bulls probably, because they do have a lot of young pieces that could turn into above average starters in one offseason. Like we mentioned, Laurie, Wendell, and Chris.
Yeah, I mean, you throw in a different nucleus of, like, vets. The Bulls, as you mentioned, they could be competing faster.
Yeah, a culture change for that team would do wonders. And obviously, Zach LaVine, you know, we mentioned he was injured and his defense isn't great. He still is able to put up a lot of points. So I think he's still a solid piece to have on that team, depending on his role. It'd be interesting to see what happens with these four teams, because the rest of the East is in the playoff hunt. And these teams are the only ones that are, look, intentionally tanking or not trying to win games or developing young talent.
The two teams I think that are most likely to join them would probably be the Miami Heat. You know, Dragic went down. I know they've been playing better as of late, but I still feel like that's a team that could go full tank mode because they got a lot of tradable assets at this point in time. And another team, I personally think it would be the Orlando Magic. Another team that we've mentioned with a lot of assets they could trade off. So I think the Florida State could be joining the Tankapalooza.
Yeah, it's a real possibility. I think, you know, Washington doesn't seem to be interested in doing that, making the trade for Ariza. But if things keep going bad, there'd be a possibility that they could go to tank mode if they trade off all their pieces. Any other thoughts on those, the best or the worst?
Just bringing in the only other bad team in the West.
The Phoenix Suns.
Where do you think the Suns fit in with these four teams?
In terms of right now or in terms of moving forward?
Right now. Like, are they the worst team in the NBA? Or?
Oh, this is tough. I think currently playing-wise over the last 10 games, the Knicks have the worst record. And they seem like very committed, and they're on a 5-game losing streak. I think Phoenix has got a little bit more energy. They're on a 2-game losing streak, but they had, I think, a 3-game winning streak before that. Atlanta, I don't know if I'd say Phoenix is the worst. I'd probably go between I think Phoenix is going to kind of bounce back. Like, I think they have Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton starting to kind of find his way. They have a lot of young pieces, and they look like they're starting to play with some energy. I think they're probably not the worst. I think it's one of the teams in the East, most likely.
Yeah.
Who's the worst for you?
I think I would still put the Suns there. But I actually might put the Suns over, because what did I have? I had the Knicks, Cavs.
The Cavs are pretty bad, and they're probably going to get worse making a trade.
I would say the Suns, I think, are probably better than the Bulls right now and the Knicks. I don't know.
It's tough. It goes week by week with the bad teams, to be
honest. Yeah, because
really good, and then 1 week they're just terrible.
The Suns have played better, oddly enough, since the trade.
It's very interesting. And it's funny because Trevor Reese is known as like the locker room energy guy. But that's enough for bad teams. Going to end it with a quick pace game. So what we're doing here is max trade and cut. So I'm going to give Corey three players. I'm sure you guys have seen this on Twitter and girls seen this on Twitter. And then he has to decide who he wants to max out, who he wants to trade, and who he wants to cut.
Here we go.
We're going to start with some major heat. First one, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Well, that's just bullshit. Oh my God.
Now now we're looking at this from the view of your franchise moving forward too. So it's not just like, all right, this season, it's about long term as well.
All right, well that's easy. I'm maxing out Antetokounmpo. What is it? It's max out, cut, and what?
Trade.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm maxing out Antetokounmpo. I'm trading Anthony Davis and I'm cutting Steph Curry. That doesn't even sound right, but that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think I might go with the same thing here. I think you probably – it's tough. You could easily swap all of them around and do it the opposite way. You know what I mean? Like there's no wrong answer here because they're all so great. But I think looking at age and then Curry's ankle and there's been somewhat of an injury concern, I think Antetokounmpo's durability has kind of made him the max guy. And depending on who you get more value for, which I think you get more value for Davis because he's younger, so you'd probably trade him and cut Steph.
That was exactly my thinking, was based on age and the fact of durability and who could flip the most.
All right, next three. Doesn't get much easier, though. Dame Lillard, Paul George, and Kyrie Irving.
Oh, man. All right, I'm cutting Lillard from this group. I can already solidify that. Man, the way Paul George has been playing, that makes it even tougher. I think normally
Kyrie's knee injury makes it a little bit more scary too.
Yeah. I'm going to say max out Paul. I'm basing this simply too off how they're playing now. So I'd max out Paul George. I'd trade Kyrie and I'd cut Lillard.
Extremely tough. I want to say Kyrie's a couple years younger than Paul George.
2 years.
So, 2 years. And I think I would max Kyrie because he's more about being the centerpiece, where we talked about Paul George not wanting to necessarily be the centerpiece. And I think that's a lot harder to find than you think it is. Just like, you know, oh, we could bring in this alpha. But I think I'd probably max Kyrie. I might trade Lillard because I think he might have more trade value than Paul George. Even as well as Paul George is playing, you remember obviously better than anyone that the Pacers – you know, there was talk about him wanting to sign with the Lakers, but it's not like the trade offers were amazing for him, where I think you might be able to get a little bit more for Dame, especially being a point guard. But I could definitely see the way that you picked as well. But I think I'd go Kyrie, max, Lillard trade, and cut Paul George. But the Paul George and Lillard thing is could flip-flop, depending on how you view alphas and betas or whatnot.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think Lillard probably does have the most he probably does have the most trade value to a sense. Because two point guards are so rare to come by, and he's never been hurt. I can't remember Lillard ever even having like a sprained ankle, really.
Yeah, he's been banged up, but he's never really missed like a month of the season or anything, and that I can recall. All right, you ready for the next three?
Yes, sir.
Might be a little easier. Jrue Holiday, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Bradley Beal.
Jrue Holiday's kind of old, right? He's like 29.
Yeah, he might. You have his age pulled up?
I'm pulling it up right now. I want to say that he's in his late 30s, though, because he's been around for a while now.
28.
Okay. So Towns is definitely the youngest. Beal is 27 ish or 26, I believe. So I'm going to cut Holiday, which hurts for me to say that. But I'm cutting Holiday. I'm not even a big Towns guy, but the realistic option would be to max out Towns and then trade Bradley Beal. So I think Beal has probably the most value in trade situation if you're maxing out Towns.
I think you actually might be able to get more for Cat, but I'm not completely.
No, that's true.
I'm not completely lost on Cat, so I think I would max him though because I think of. It's extremely hard to find a center that fits for the new NBA. And I think Cat with some better coaching and maybe a better, you know, team culture could turn his body probably around a little bit more and turn his game around. So I'd probably max him out. I'd probably cut Holiday, like you said. And that's probably my mistake for making it too easy because he's older than the other two. And then Bradley Beal, I'd probably look to trade because he's such a great fit and there'd be so much interest where you could probably leverage teams against each other.
Yeah. And I think Towns too, like even though he's not a good defending center. He's actually still a decent rim protector.
Yeah, you can hide him easily if he never becomes more than what he is. I think there's still plenty of potential there, though.
Yeah.
All right, last four. Victor Oladipo, Blake Griffin, and Jimmy Butler. So all different ages here. I already know who you're going to max. I don't even know why I added him.
I'm going to max like Victor Oladipo.
I think that's big surprise over here.
I think I'm going to trade Jimmy Butler, and I'm going to cut Blake Griffin. I know Blake Griffin's been tremendous and everything, but I'm more concerned with his list of injuries than I am Jimmy Butler's.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think you're probably somewhat taking contract into consideration here, and I don't think you can trade Blake.
I didn't think about that, but that's a good point too.
Oladipo getting the max, Jimmy Butler in the trade, you're not going to get a ton of value. You're not going to get a ton of value for Blake either, and I don't think you really want to max Blake or Jimmy Butler. So I gave you a kind of a layup for the last one.
Yeah, that was pretty easy.
You got any you want to throw at me to finish this off?
Let me see. Give me a second to think of one real quick. Okay. John Wall. Kyle Lowry. And Kemba Walker. I threw you three point guards.
Okay, so Kemba, Lowry, and Wall.
Yeah. I feel like that's kind of tough.
Yeah, I think I would probably – John Wall's injuries are kind of scary, and his game doesn't necessarily fit. I think Lowry's age kind of pushes me to want to max Kemba. And I think if we're taking contract into consideration, then I think you'd probably trade Lowry because he's tradable. His contract isn't amazing, but it's a lot better than John Wall, and you can get out from under it, and you probably cut John Wall.
Yeah. All right, I got one more for you. This is a good one. Jason Tatum, De'Aaron Fox, and Donovan Mitchell.
So De'Aaron Fox, Donovan Mitchell, and Jason Tatum.
That's a good one to end it on.
That's a good one. I'm probably going to use some of my recent bias here, and I think you might look to cut Donovan Mitchell. Is that weird to say?
It's how I felt when I said Curry.
Yeah, I think De'Aaron Fox, it's like tough because he's only done it for like a quarter of the season, and last year he didn't look amazing. I think I'd max out Jason Tatum because I feel the most confident knowing what his game is. Like, I feel like I know what Jason Tatum is, and I feel like I'll trade De'Aaron Fox and then cut Donovan Mitchell, which just doesn't seem right. But I actually thought of a really hard one for you while you were coming up with them.
Okay.
Luka, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid.
Oh, boy. I'm cutting Ben Simmons easily. It's not even a question. And then I'm maxing out Luka.
Ooh.
Because you can build around Luka. And then I'm trading Embiid because the amount of assets you can get for Embiid is ridiculous. And Embiid still does have that lingering foot injury in my mind. And he's still 7 foot, so who knows? You know, when your body breaks down at that size, you're just done. So I think I would go in that order because I think Luka's just phenomenal, and I think Embiid would probably be the one I'd be risky to get rid of, but the asset return, then Ben Simmons, you can't shoot.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'd probably go with that route as well. I think the Embiid and Luka thing you could easily swap depending on how you view centers. And if you think that, if Embiid is kind of exposed sometimes in the playoffs or by Boston, which he has been. So obviously there's still plenty of room for improvement for all these guys, but it's going to be something to kind of keep an eye moving forward. Any other ones, Corey, before we get out of here?
No, that's it. That was a fun game, though. That was a nice little switch up.
Yeah, definitely pretty difficult, and we'll try to come up with harder ones for next time. But as always, appreciate everybody listening. Happy holidays. Corey, always a pleasure. And check us out, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.